What is God's purpose for marriage? How should we respond when traditional marriage is openly mocked as irrelevant? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Your Marriage by God's Design. It's written by Issues, Etc. regular guests Scott and Julie Stiegemeier. You can find out more about Your Marriage by God's Design at issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your Marriage by God's Design, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month.
As a proud Catholic, I've never really cared much for atheists. If you're turning your back on God's Christian teachings, then at least have the courage to call yourself a Lutheran.
While individuals have their own religious beliefs and consciences, businesses that employ thousands of hardworking Americans do not.
Hobby Lobby is a family-owned business that doesn't want Washington to be their boss. They believe that abortion takes the life of a child and that every child deserves a chance at life. What's wrong with that?
This fuzzy postmodern sentiment, you know, that intentions matter more than outcomes.
Chaplain deployed to Washington, D.C. absolutely love Issues, Etc.
You see the, I'll call it, for lack of a better word, the photo op, even though it is obviously far more than just a photo opportunity, but you see it depicted this way. Two men of really unparalleled stature standing next to one another, President Obama, President of the United States, and arguably the most powerful man in the world, and Pope Francis, who is, well, he's the Pope. One word says it all, and arguably, well, one of the most powerful men in the world, but for two different reasons. Why do popes and presidents meet? What's in it for the president to meet U.S. presidents, and many of them have, to take an audience with the Pope? I guess it kind of raises a question of who's providing the audience for whom in this case. What do they say to each other? What do you discuss when you are the president of the United States? What do you discuss with the president when you are the Pope? Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon. It's the 27th of March. We're going to be talking about popes and presidents, a little history of the relationship between these two office bearers. Dr. James Hitchcock of St. Louis University will be our guest for the first 20 minutes or so. Then we will pick up on our series, Christ in the Old Testament in Isaiah 42, with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. You can join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Joining us to talk about popes and presidents, Dr. James Hitchcock, Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University and a regular guest. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back.
Always glad to be here.
I'm wondering about from the perspective of the church, what's the purpose of the Pope meeting with a U.S. president?
Well, I would say that the hope is that on the Pope's part that he can influence the president in terms of the moral basis of politics, of what justice in the world should be the primary consideration and not just politics. And Stalin, of course, is supposed to have said, how many divisions does the Pope have? And the Pope doesn't have the coercive power that the state has, but he has moral authority, and I think he hopes to be able to exercise it in some meaningful way.
Who is granting the audience to whom in this case?
Pardon me?
Who is granting the audience to whom?
In this particular case, it's the Pope granting an audience to the president. The president, of course, has come to what is in fact a foreign country, Vatican City. And so I don't know the process by which this was set up, but obviously he would have had to have said, I'd like to see you. Can you see me? The Pope said, yes, by all means, come in. There have been cases where popes have come to the United States, and in those cases they have been received by the president. Here's a reverse situation.
As you've watched these things, and especially from the perspective of an historian, same question, kind of the flip side from the first question. From the perspective of a U.S. president, what do you think is the purpose of seeking an audience with the Pope?
Well, not to be too cynical about it, but I think that President Obama or any president thinks that his popularity, you might say, with Catholics will be increased by this. In this particular situation, President Obama has a very low approval rating, while Pope Francis has an extremely high approval rating. The president may hope that some of this a little bit will rub off on him. He has come under severe criticism, of course, from the Catholic hierarchy in the United States because of his position on abortion, on homosexual marriage, contraceptive as part of the of his health plan. And I think he's probably trying to shake off a little bit of that if he can. And he presumably wants to get his own point of view across to the Pope as well.
Let's talk a little bit of the history then. How long have presidents been meeting with popes?
The first one was Pope Benedict XV and Woodrow Wilson in 1919. Then there were no others until the 50s with Dwight Eisenhower. Since then, every president has met with every pope, the one exception being the short-lived pontificate of John Paul I. So it has become a quasi-tradition in world affairs.
Now, let's talk about the I want to come, you know, jump around a little bit, but the first and only Roman Catholic president the U.S. has ever had, John F. Kennedy. How would you characterize his relationship with the Pope of his time?
Well, it's difficult to say what might have been the actual attitude of John the 23rd. We will rarely know. We rarely get a candid report on these meetings, unless it sort of sneaks out, slips out a little bit. Kennedy, of course, had gone to some lengths to dissociate himself from the church. I will not allow my religion to dictate my policies. I think that what Kennedy tried to do with John the 23rd is, well, we're all committed to peace. We're trying to prevent war. You might say a kind of a cliche. Who's going to say no? But in any case, it might also have had the effect of repairing some of the criticism that he got when he seemed to dissociate his religion from his politics.
Was that particular association or that particular meeting between Kennedy and the Pope, was that, at least from the church's perspective, something different than if a non-Catholic president met with the Pope?
I'm not sure. One might assume that a pope might say to the president, you're a Catholic, here are your obligations, here are your moral obligations as a Catholic. I'm inclined to think maybe he didn't say that, I'm just guessing, and treated him as a head of state like every other head of state. And, of course, it would be the position of the church on these moral issues, these issues of justice, that we're not speaking here simply from religious authority. We're not saying that you have to be in favor of peace or that you have to be against abortion because the church says so. The church says these are moral insights which are available to all right-thinking human beings. And so the Pope would see himself as reminding the president of this, not necessarily invoking his Catholic identity.
Pope John Paul XXIII was, although he had a rather short papacy, was very, very popular.
Yes.
Was he the first to kind of rival U.S. presidents in terms of popularity, worldwide popularity?
Yes, I would guess offhand that was the case, although, of course, some presidents have been more popular or less popular than others. At the time that Woodrow Wilson met with Pope Benedict XV, Wilson's popularity was rapidly eroding, and so was his influence. He went to the Versailles Peace Conference. This was 1919, the same year he met with the Pope, and he only got some of the things he wanted, he wanted the United. He wanted the League of Nations, but the Senate, the United States Senate, actually refused to join, which was a major blow to Wilson. So you might say, I don't. They didn't take opinion polls in those days about popes, but you might say that Wilson was had a declining status at that point, and maybe the pope's status was higher.
Of the U.S. presidents that have met with the various popes, which one, aside from Kennedy, which one stands out the most in terms of kind of historical note?
It's a very good question. I'm inclined to think maybe Ronald Reagan, and there I would particularly focus on the Soviet Union. And Reagan, of course, was determined that the Soviet Union was going to fall. If America took a very strong, uncompromising position, the Soviet Union would self-destruct, which it basically did. And we know that, to a great extent, that seems to have also been John Paul's idea. And so in some accounts of the demise of the Soviet Union, you'll see Reagan and John Paul's names linked together as both major influences, major factors in that disappearance.
What in the meetings of popes and presidents have what kind of tensions have come out?
Oh,
in
tension.
Yes.
Well, I think that's the sort of thing again that we don't hear about. You know, the press accounts, the official press accounts that have come out about today's meeting are almost, I would say, in the nature of cliches. We're in favor of world peace. We're against poverty. We're against sexual trafficking. Who's going to say no? Whatever disagreements there may have been are not going to be broadcast. We might learn about them, as I said, later as things begin to leak out. But this is really, in a way, the nature of international diplomacy, even when the church is not involved. When two heads of state meet, the tendency is to issue a fairly innocuous-sounding statement that implies agreement and so forth, even if in fact it's not there. Now, if you go back further in history, there are innumerable instances in the history of the church where popes have met with the heads of state, and many of these have been extremely negative. The one that immediately comes to mind would be Napoleon, who actually took the pope a prisoner, and the pope kept at it, trying to persuade Napoleon to change his ways, but with largely without much success. And you go back into the Middle Ages, and you have these sometimes horrendous clashes between popes and emperors. Pope Boniface VIII in the early 14th century, who's roughed up by an imperial army and dies more or less as a result of that. So we're in a very different environment here in the 20th century, but it's got a long history.
Are there examples between popes and presidents of the popes, so to speak, speaking truth to power?
Well, I think the popes see themselves certainly as doing that. Now, again, how they do it, since we don't know, we're not there, we didn't hear what was said, how exactly they do it, I don't know. You know, does the pope say to the president, Mr. President, you're really wrong about this, you're really insensitive about this, you really need to change? Or is he more likely to say, now we agree, don't we, that there has to be some, that greater attention has to be paid to the poor of the world, or greater attention has to be paid to immigrants. We agree on that, and I let it kind of flow along like that. I doubt that it's confrontational. But not being there, I don't know.
To what degree, from the church's perspective, is the pope a political figure?
Well, the pope is, I think, inevitably a political figure because he does participate in international affairs. The distinction between religion and politics, I think, is a somewhat arbitrary one. From a Christian point of view, politics is supposed to be based upon principles of justice. So therefore, almost every so-called political issue involves what is, in effect, a religious issue. So you can't say, oh, well, the pope is only a religious leader. It's got nothing to do with politics. Historically, again, going back to the early centuries, popes have always insisted on speaking out on political issues where they see a moral issue involved.
In the relationships between popes and presidents, do the popes generally seem aware of the fact that there's potential for them to be kind of used for domestic political purposes by the president? In other words, to boost his popularity or to drive a wedge between Catholics of one ilk and Catholics of another on social issues?
Well, I would certainly think they would. I'm sure that if Pope Francis was not aware of it already, as undoubtedly he was, he was certainly briefed about it. He's heard from American bishops. He's heard from the papal nuncio. That's why I found the public statements that were issued on both sides to be, I want to say cliche, that's putting it too strongly, but not telling you a whole lot. Two people got together, they exchanged ideas, they found some bases of agreement. If there were disagreements, we're not talking about them. I think it's going to be difficult for Obama to, use this meeting to say, oh, you know, where the health care plan is concerned, the Pope is on my side. Now, here's the ironic thing. The Pope, and for that matter, the American hierarchy, are on Obama's side on a lot of issues, on immigration reform. The American bishops are not against the health plan in principle. They're against what they think are some bad aspects of it. American bishops have generally favored things like the expansion of the welfare state, increasing the minimum wage and that kind of thing. So there's not a profound chasm here. It's all centered on a few specific so-called social issues, and I don't think Obama's going to get any mileage out of his meeting with the Pope.
One of the things that's been noted, and I was looking at an article in the Washington Post by E.J. Dionne, who is writing about the meeting between President Obama and Pope Francis. One of the things that he highlights is what he calls the larger truth that Francis, as Pope, defies many currents of American thinking. I think he even says at one point that Pope Francis simply does not share the American worldview. Do you think that's accurate?
Yes, I think that is true, but one should qualify that by saying multiple American worldviews. He doesn't fit readily into what we call liberal conservative in the United States. He's somewhat far to the left, you might say, on economic issues, but at the same time, within the framework of the capitalist system, he's definitely says he's not a socialist, he's not a Marxist. It would be a mistake, I think, for either liberals or conservatives in the U.S. to say, Pope Francis is one of ours. He's looking at things in a rather different way.
You mentioned earlier that this has become an informal tradition for U.S. presidents to, at some point in the course of their term or terms of office, to seek an audience with the Pope or to meet with the Pope, receive him there in Washington, D.C. if the Pope visits the U.S. If a U.S. president let 4 years or 8 years of his terms go by without visiting the Pope, broke the tradition, what do you think would be the consequence?
Well, it would be very significant, I think. It would indicate if this is true, whoever the next president is going to be, it would perhaps suggest that things didn't go all that well on this visit. Although I don't tend to think that any serious breach took place here. I think both sides knew already where they stood and nothing much changed. The United States is now trying to persuade the Pope to come here. And if he comes here, then it will be the president who is granting him an audience. And we'll have. It's interesting. There have been a couple of very informal meetings on occasion. One of which took place here in St. Louis when John Paul II was coming here, and he overlapped with Bill Clinton leaving by a matter of an hour or so, and they got together and they had an unscheduled talk. And nobody quite knows what emerged from that, but it was quite interesting. And similarly, there was a sort of a brief and unscheduled meeting between Ronald Reagan and John Paul II in, I believe it was in Alaska, as they were both traveling in opposite directions. And not too long after that, the United States opened diplomatic relations with the Vatican. So it could be thought that that is what was discussed in that informal meeting.
Finally, then, you mentioned that the U.S. is kind of holding open an invitation to Francis to make a papal visit. How likely do you think that is to occur?
I think there's a good chance. We have to take into account his age, of course, although he seems to be in good health. He's got other commitments. He's going to the Holy Land. He's going to some other places. The Archbishop of Philadelphia, Archbishop Chaput, is pressing the Pope to come because they're having another what they call World Youth Day in Philadelphia. So I think that will be it will be a strong possibility that he will come. Now, one thing that has to be considered, and of course it entered also into the meeting today, the Pope does not speak English. Now, that doesn't prevent him from coming, doesn't prevent him from giving, you know, a series of talks or sermons, but it would be a little bit less of a direct impact, perhaps, than it was when John Paul would come and who knew English well.
Dr. James Hitchcock is Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, it's always a pleasure, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here always.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. We have a series with him every week, Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Isaiah chapter 42. Stay tuned.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Folks attending last year's Making the Case conference absolutely loved the barbecue from Randy's House of Barbecue in Troy and Highland, Illinois. The pork, chicken, ribs, and beef are prepared just like the old days in a pit cooked over hickory, apple, and wild cherry wood. Randy's House of Barbecue, Route 40 and Troy O'Fallon Road in Troy, and at 2649 Northtown Way in Highland. Randy's House of Barbecue, randysbbq.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler, pastor, or teacher? Would you like to be equipped to teach more effectively? Join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Find the conference schedule recently posted at ccle.org. Discover the education that is our Lutheran heritage, ccle.org.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.